Okay, I don't see anybody. So we're going to get a presentation from Mr. Brookhart on the Hudson Canyon National Marine Sanctuary scoping process. Mr. Brookhart, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Chairman Reed and Mr. Neese, for inviting us to speak today. Apologize for being so late in the day. My name is Matt Brookhart. I'm the Regional Director of the Eastern Region, the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries. I'm joined today by Ed Lindelof on the call. Our point person on this process, Leanne Hogan, is not on the call today, but will be available for questions should folks have them following this meeting. June 8th, we issued a notice of intent to begin the public scoping process for the Hudson Canyon National Marine Sanctuary proposal. We are in an open comment period until August 8th. We can stay on this slide right here, it's fine. But there will be other opportunities for the public to comment as this proposal evolves. Spoke with Mr. Neese to do a quick overview of the process today. I apologize we could not be there in person, but I will just talk quickly about our organization, the sanctuary designation process, and then a little bit about this specific proposal. As you can see from this slide, the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries is part of NOAA's National Ocean Service. This is our 50th year. We celebrate our 50th anniversary this year as we were designated by Congress in 1972. Next slide, please. The National Marine Sanctuary System is comprised of 15 National Marine Sanctuaries, and two marine monuments from the Western Pacific to the Great Lakes to the Florida Keys. We represent a very diverse constituency, a lot of diverse communities, a lot of diverse interests. Next slide, please. Our primary management objectives are directed by the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. Primarily, we seek to conserve for future generations areas of the ocean and Great Lakes of special national significance. We strive to strike a balance between resource protection and sustainable use. We strive to employ community-based problem solving with a focus on non-regulatory solutions. We look at individual sanctuaries individually and customize management actions to each of their unique situations. We work to enhance our efforts through a wide and diverse array of partnerships, and we strive to use the best available science in our decision-making. Next slide, please. Our primary management tools include, but are not limited to, research and monitoring, outreach and engagement with the public. We focus on maritime history and heritage. We employ volunteers. We use regulatory and non-regulatory programs to meet our mission. We depend on broad representation of sanctuary advisory councils. We'll talk to you about them a little bit more in a second. We promote recreation and tourism. We promote engagement with Indigenous and tribal partners, and we promote partnerships across a wide variety of academia, the federal and state government, and others interested in our mission. Next slide, please. Sanctuary advisory councils are present at all of the National Marine Sanctuaries. These are is a body of volunteers who provide advice and recommendations to the sanctuary superintendent. You can see from this slide the diversity, the types of seats we see at our sanctuary advisory councils. We could not do our job without these councils. They are an instrumental part of how individual National Marine Sanctuaries make management decisions. Next slide, please. The National Marine Sanctuary System does have two marine monuments under our authority that we manage. But we are primarily implementing National Marine Sanctuaries under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. As many of you know, marine monuments are established by executive order under the Antiquities Act. National Marine Sanctuaries are established under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act and the National Environmental Policy Act via a very robust public process that takes between 3 and 5 years to complete. This Hudson Canyon proposal is being implemented under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act, and we'll follow that robust public process, which I'll talk to you about a little bit more in the next few slides. But I also wanted to say that this effort should not be confused with Northeast Canyons and Seamouse Monument off the Georges Bank, which was established by President Obama via executive order in 2016 and is managed by NOAA Fisheries. Next slide, please. So the sanctuary designation process, as I mentioned, takes about 3 to 5 years to complete on average. We are in the very initial phase of this public scoping. We are providing 60 days for the public to comment in an almost blank slate environment here. This is the very first phase of the process, and we really do rely heavily on the public input to give us their thoughts and ideas about the specifics of this National Marine Sanctuary proposal, including boundaries, including management actions, and any other opportunities or concerns that they see. We will review these public comments, and if you can tap, maybe we can go to the next. I think these are on a... There we go. Thank you. This public comment and this scoping period really lays the groundwork for the development of our draft documents, including an EIS, draft EIS. All new sanctuaries must be reviewed under NEPA with an EIS. We will also produce a draft management plan and a proposed rulemaking. Those will be released again for public review and comment in about a 12 to 16 month period. During this time, we will also continue with our intergovernmental and stakeholder consultations, including the New England Fishery Management Council, and public review at public meetings at the DEIS phase and possibly at the proposed rulemaking phase if we separate those two. Then we take all those comments from that second round or third round of public comment and produce our final EIS and our final management plan and rule. And again, on average, we have seen this process to take about 3 to 5 years. I want to mention quickly to the Council, NMSA, National Marine Sanctuaries Act, Section 304A5. I spoke with Mr. Neese about this quickly, but this is a key element for the New England Fishery Management Council and for us in this early phase. This is a clause within the National Marine Sanctuaries Act that requires us to provide the Council with the opportunity to prepare draft fishing regulations if the Council deems them necessary to implement this designation. I will be sending a letter shortly to you, Chairman Reed, and to Mr. Neese, to the Mid-Atlantic Council and the South Atlantic Council, to initiate this consultation. I would like to talk with you more about the details of this, but my letter will include the process involved with 304A5. In short, the Council can take three actions under Section 304A5. The first is to recommend to us draft fishing regulations to meet the goals of this sanctuary. The second action is to recommend that any fishing regulations are not necessary to implement this National Marine Sanctuary proposal, and to choose not to act on the matter. And as I've mentioned, we would like to start this process now so that we can incorporate your analysis and your expert opinion and ultimately your recommendations into the draft environmental impact statement for public review. So just a few quick things on the Hudson Canyon nomination and proposal. We originally received a nomination from the Wildlife Conservation Society and the New York Aquarium in February of 2016. After internal review of that nomination, we placed the proposal on our inventory for areas that could be potentially designated as a National Marine Sanctuary. The notice of intent that went out a few weeks ago was the result of the NOAA administrator asking us to begin the public scoping process on this proposal as it was originally presented to us from the Wildlife Conservation Society. In particular, that nomination called out several intentions for this proposal: to support long-term conservation of marine wildlife and habitats, to highlight and support sustainable economic uses of the Hudson Canyon, including fishing, preclude such uses as oil and gas development and mineral extraction, expand ocean education and outreach programs, and monitoring and research programs as well, and bring together diverse organizations for local and regional partnerships that would lead to an adaptive approach to management of this unique area. Next slide, please. Many of you know that the Hudson Canyon is a unique environment. 100 miles southeast of New York City, it's one of the largest submarine canyons along the Atlantic coast. It can reach 7.5 miles wide and depths of up to 2.5 miles. Steep slopes, diverse sediments, areas of upwelling leads to it to be an exceptionally hot spot ecologically for a variety of abundance of marine life. It's also rich in indigenous culture and history, and we have been speaking with Shinnecock Indian Nation about their thoughts on this proposal as well. Next slide, please. It's just, you know, other things about the canyon that were very attractive to us. Nationally significant natural resources. It is a very productive area for habitat for many fish and invertebrates. Also for threatened and endangered and protected species. Unique geological features. But also provides a sense of place for coastal communities, not the least of which is the New York City urban area, as well as very significant maritime history and heritage. Next slide, please. So while I mentioned the WCS nomination, at this point, this action now has been taken by NOAA and put into the public domain for review. So our own specific goals at this very early stage for this proposal is to support long-term conservation of the area's marine wildlife habitats and maritime cultural resources. We also want to highlight and promote sustainable uses of the area, which does include fishing. Work to identify and raise awareness of indigenous connections to this area, expand our ocean science and monitoring programs throughout NOAA in this area, as well as education and awareness. And also to promote these partnerships that allow us to engage in adaptive management over the long term of this area and really try to apply a science-based approach to understanding things such as climate change and how they are affecting a unique natural feature such as the Hudson Canyon. And I just want to reiterate for that last point that at this very early phase, there are no boundaries being proposed or no management actions. Those will ultimately be published as part of the DEIS in 12 to 16 months' time. This is just a list of some of the specific things we are seeking comments on at this early phase. This does not preclude folks from sending us comments on anything that they see relevant to this proposal. But again, we are seeking comments on boundary options that meet the goals of this proposed designation. We're seeking comments on the threats to these resources, information on the indigenous heritage of the area, the non-regulatory actions we should take to and prioritize within our draft management plan, regulations that may be most appropriate for this proposed sanctuary, and the benefits to the blue economy of the region, including promoting sustainable tourism and recreation, and supporting healthy fisheries. We're also seeking a permanent name for the proposed sanctuary as part of this early phase of comments. So the next couple of slides will be in the presentation. This is just some information about how comments can be submitted. We also wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that we have three additional scoping meetings coming up. These are just, again, the meetings themselves. The public comment period is open until August 8th. We will have a second virtual public meeting on August 3rd, and then two in-person public meetings, one at the Alexander Customs House in Manhattan, the second at Monmouth University in New Jersey. Last, we do have a dedicated website for information on Hudson Canyon for anyone who is interested in commenting on this proposal. This should give you additional sources to help you provide comments should you wish to do so. And the last thing that I did want to say is a lot of information coming to the council in a short and late point in the day. I had spoke to Mr. Neese about our interest in getting in front of this council again. As we learn more about the evolution of this proposal, we analyze the public comments, and I get the 304A5 consultation letter out to you. If you are interested, we would be more than happy to come to either the September or the December meeting to talk further about what we're learning with this proposal. So I thank you for your time, and if there's time for questions, I can try to answer as many as possible.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brookhart. Yeah, we're going to make time for questions here. So I'm going to go to the council first. I'm going to start with Mr. Neese.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joan or Juanita, could you back up the slides, I think, to the timeline that Mr. Brookhart showed? I remember.
Maybe the one with the big yellow comment box on it. I want to say it's
that's the
number 8.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. First, I'd like to thank you, Matt, for agreeing to present to us. I know it was short notice of us to ask you, and I appreciate you making an attempt to get up here, but I appreciate you taking the time to sit through with us through our meeting and give us a presentation, because frankly, this is a very important issue to us and we're very interested in it. I guess I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on the 304A5 process. My specific question there is, does this give us more time to comment, or are we still bound by the August 8th comment period?
Thanks. That's a great question, Tom. So the 304A5 process will provide the councils with a distinct time frame and recommendation to get your thoughts back to us. At this point, as you and I have discussed, we are setting a December 31 timeline for that. These timelines are negotiable based on your meeting schedule. We know that you meet episodically throughout the year. But the letter that I will be sending to you will indicate that that December 31 timeframe is really what we're hoping can be something to get your recommendations back to us in a timely manner. So to answer your question, that process will provide the council with additional time to comment beyond the August 8th date set for the public scoping process.
Thank you. One more question that you and I talked about, but I think the council may want to hear it, is, again, the 304A5 process, let's suppose we comment through that through December, whatever date we decide on, whatever we negotiate. Does it give us any more standing as the draft documents are developed? Would you consult with us if you have specific questions about fisheries actions while you're developing the draft documents after that comment period?
Yes, we can certainly do that. I think what we would really like from the council and with regard to 304A5 is not just your opinion on the three actions that I mentioned in that slide, but also any additional expert opinion and analysis on why you are rendering that opinion for us. That will all be incorporated into our analysis as part of the EIS process. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I think it does. That's all I have right now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Neese. Dr. Sissonwine.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I've got two quick questions. I hope they're quick. I'm trying to recall, since it's been so long since I've had any involvement with this type of thing, trying to recall where the final decision lies in terms of a designation. I have some vague recollection that there's a congressional role involved in this, but I would like some, could you tell me who ultimately makes the decision? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the decision is ultimately made by the NOAA administrator, but there is a clause within the National Marine Sanctuaries Act that provides for 45 days of continuous congressional review of the final proposal before any sanctuary can become fully final. And the key word there is continuous congressional review. That often can take longer than 45 days, as many of you might have figured. But to be clear, that does not provide any singular or unique member of Congress the right to veto. It is full congressional review, but Congress is given that right to review in that 45 days of continuous session before the sanctuary is final.
Okay, I recall that in the case of the Skelwagon Bank Sanctuary, that process resulted in some particular rules about what fisheries-related actions could actually be implemented within the sanctuaries. Am I recalling that correctly, and is that a possible outcome in this case?
Yes, I think you are recalling that correctly. Ed, if you can chime in on that, do you have anything you'd like to answer to that question?
Not sure what he just asked.
So, I'm going out on a limb here.
Oh, sorry, I have another colleague on the phone.
Oh, sorry, I just muted. Who is it we're trying to unmute?
His name is Ed Lindelof.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Thank you. This is Ed Lindelof. It was my recollection that in that case, Congress actually passed a law. There was a provision attached to one of the laws that Congress passed that laid out some of the restrictions for Stellwagen. As Matt indicated, Congress has 45 days continuous session of Congress to review it. But if they actually want to take any action and change anything that's been proposed or add anything that they want to add in, they actually have to take the typical congressional action. They have to, pass a law. They have to have a bill in the House, in the Senate, and then signed by the president. The committee itself can't make a change.
Okay, thank you for that. So it is a potentially complicated process with lots of things that can go very well, or I guess could go wrong, depending on your perspective. Anyway, the other question I had about this is that, again, just thinking back from a long time ago, there was an understanding within NOAA between NOS and the National Ocean Service and NIMS that to the degree possible, any fishery management that was necessary within a sanction would be carried out under the auspices of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Is that still generally the desired way one would want to proceed if there is fishery management necessary as a result of the designation? Thank you.
Yes, that's a good question. That is still the model that we follow for the vast majority of the National Marine Sanctuary System. Federal fisheries managers, the councils, National Marine Fisheries Service, are the primary managers of fisheries across all of the National Marine Sanctuaries. We, per 304A5, work with the councils and NOAA fisheries to get their input on this question of whether any fishing regulations they feel are warranted or not. That's the purpose of us conducting that consultation. But to your question in general, yes, the National Marine Sanctuary System and fishing in the EEZ is overwhelmingly managed, continues to be managed by NOAA fisheries and the councils.
Thank you for that, and I certainly encourage everybody to work together to make it smooth as possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I have a question, Mr. Brookhart. Are you aware of the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council's discrete coral zone that is already in Hudson Canyon with management and boundaries that exist already?
Yes, we are.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to go to you, Mr. Hughes, and then to Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Brookhart, for the presentation. My question is earlier today we received a presentation from the Habitat Committee. And slide 5 showed habitat areas of particular concern around the East Coast of the United States, and one of those habitat areas of particular concern was Hudson Canyon, and that was on slide 5 during Ms. Bachman's presentation earlier today. And I'm wondering what the difference is between the habitat area of a particular concern and why we would need to move forward with something along these lines when it was explained to us earlier today that for any oil and natural gas exploration that there would need to be direct consultation with NOAA and National Marine Fisheries Service, who could obviously deny that request. So I'm wondering what the strategic difference is. Thank you.
I think I understand your question. So any habitat area of particular concern would represent an overlapping management action that occurs within a sanctuary, or in this case, a sanctuary should it be designated. And we often view those types of management actions under the Magnuson-Stevens Act and other authorities of the National Marine Fisheries Service to be fully compliant with the goals and objectives for a National Marine Sanctuary. So in other words, you often see HAPCs coexisting with National Marine Sanctuaries from the West Coast to the East Coast and everywhere in between. So we don't see them as being mutually exclusive. We see them as actually being mutually beneficial to goals under the Magnuson-Stevens Act and goals under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. With regard to your question about oil and gas, I'm not sure I understand, or maybe I'm just not aware of the confluence of HAPCs and oil and gas. Typically with National Marine Sanctuaries, there are prohibitions on the development and exploration for oil and gas, which then provide unique regulations under the National Marine Sanctuaries for those types of prohibitions. So I think that's the best I can answer your question at this point. I hope that answered your question, but maybe I'm missing something.
As a follow-up, thank you very much for that. It was explained to us earlier that by designating an area of habitat area for HAPC, certain user groups or, you know, wannabe user groups would have to go through a certain steps of rulemaking with National Marine Fisheries Service or NOAA for their approval on that. And I believe that one of those might possibly be oil and gas exploration. And then I guess my second question would be, why the duplicative process? If there's already an HAPC identified there, why would we need a secondary layer on top of that? So,
okay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I would defer to my colleagues in the National Marine Fisheries Service to comment on whether an HAPC can prohibit oil and gas development. It's my understanding that it cannot. And so if that is accurate, then you would not have a duplicitous situation. The National Marine Sanctuaries Act regulations would allow for that prohibition, whereas the HAPC would not. That's my understanding, but if I'm wrong, I would turn to one of my Fisheries Service colleagues to correct me on that.
Yeah, Mr. Brookhart, you're correct. So as we discussed with the new HAPC that the council designated this afternoon, that designation gives NMFS sort of a heightened level of review ability when performing an essential fish habitat consultation with any other federal agency, but it does not increase the level of authority that we have to prevent an activity by another federal agency. So in the case of offshore oil and gas exploration, that would be a federal action that would require an essential fish habitat consultation with NMFS. We would certainly, if an HAP existed in that area, we would certainly use that information, that designation, to make our conservation recommendations to the federal agency. But again, those would simply be recommendations. They could not preclude the activity from moving forward. As you suggest, a sanctuary designation could, in fact, preclude that activity.
Thank you both.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Pierdenock, and I don't have any hands up after you, Mike, so I'll go to the public real quickly for any questions from the public. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. Just for some clarification, as you noted, the final decision would be made by NOAA, and then there'd be a 45 days of continuous congressional review. Then let's say it gets approved. My question then is, my understanding with the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary, and I think you previously mentioned this, there's two things that go on with the management of that location. is that the fishery management remains within the New England Fishery Management Council, has the management of that fishery within the sanctuary. That's not to be done independently by the sanctuary. There's a letter that was written by the council in 2017 that is on our file here and on our electronic file here that indicates there was some misunderstanding of who or who had such power and did not have such power. So I wanted to just make it sure it's clear that when you say it's subject to the Magnuson-Stevenson Act, that would be via the New England Fishery Management Council. That would not be via the sanctuary, number one. Number two, my understanding is also that if the Stellwagen Sanctuary wanted to change the management of the fishery, they would have to go before Congress for congressional action. Is that going to be the same criteria for the Hudson, or is that up in the air? Because I believe it's different among different sanctuaries, how that works and who actually has management of the fishery and the activities within it. For example, way back when, before Stellwagen was formed, marine protection areas were created in California, which were independent and just done by the sanctuaries themselves. So I have these questions because I'm curious of whether this is what's in flux here, and through this public participation process, it will then be like approach A, B, or C, or are we using the Stellwagen criteria for Hudson? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pierdnock, and thank you for all of your efforts with Stellwagen over the years. I want to make sure that I try to answer this question, and but I do want to emphasize that this is sort of a complex question, but I think I can try to answer it as simply as I can, at least at this point. So any fishing regulations that are implemented in a national marine sanctuary will typically come under three separate authorities. Magnuson Act, in small cases under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act, and for sanctuaries that abut the shoreline, any relevant state fisheries regulations. The only management that any national marine sanctuary can do under our own authorities would have to include regulations on fishing under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act, and those are rare. So if any fishing regulations would be proposed for the Hudson Canyon National Marine Sanctuary now or into the future, they would have to go through this same process. They do not require congressional approval, but they certainly require consultation under Section 304A5. So in the case of Hudson, if the New England Council, the Mid-Atlantic Council, or the South Atlantic Council all come back to us and say, we do not believe any fishing regulations or any new fishing regulations or additional fishing regulations are necessary to implement this new National Marine Sanctuary, and we ultimately concur with that, the sanctuary is designated, and all fishing regulations are as they currently stand for this area, for the Hudson Canyon, under Magnuson and under other authorities. The only way that would change in the future is if we go through this same process. So we would have to go through this 304A5 process to have the councils weigh in on this, provide their advice and recommendations for any future proposal of any fishing regulation, based on any changes that would come now, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years down the road. So I hope that answers. This is probably a conversation that needs further detail, but generally that is the approach that we take. And by law, we are required to consult with the respective Fishery Management Council anytime a regulation on fishing is proposed in a national marine sanctuary.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. So I have no more hands up from the council. I have one hand up from the public. I'll take that question. Ms. Lapp?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Megan Lapp, Seafreeze. I have a question as to the scoping process here. I was involved the last time the Wildlife Conservation Society and New York Aquarium proposed Hudson Canyon as marine sanctuary. You know, I've read the documents, and in those documents, they were proposing restrictions on mobile bottom tending deer fisheries in the Hudson Canyon area. And this proposal is what they brought up again. So my question is, considering that in your presentation, you highlighted that the sanctuary's process is meant to be, you know, reaching out to stakeholder groups, et cetera, why there is not one in-person meeting in any commercial fishing port up and down the East Coast? The only two in-person meetings, one, as you noted, is in Lower Manhattan, coming up shortly, an evening in Manhattan, which is clearly designed to gain feedback from Manhattan-based organizations. And then the other in-person meeting is at Monmouth University in New Jersey, which is really, you know, designed to attract academia. And considering the only restrictions on current uses that are proposed by the Wildlife Conservation Society are on mobile bottom tending gears, why there are no in-person meetings in commercial fishing ports? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I'll try to take both of your questions there. The first is, I am not aware of any restrictions or any management actions proposed by the Wildlife Conservation Society on bottom tending gear in the nomination that we have received. The nominators, Wildlife Conservation Society, and others who have signed on to that, that nomination indicated that they believe that the fisheries were very well managed in the New York Bight and wanted to see fisheries management remain in the hands of federal fisheries managers like the New England Council and NOAA Fisheries. So I am not aware of any proposal at that level of detail from Wildlife Conservation Society. And we are at this point not proposing anything of that nature during public scoping period. To your question regarding public meetings, we are looking at the scoping process truly for what it is at this point, which is a very, very general opening on this proposal. We have identified a series of questions that and comments that we would like to see from the public. But again, we are not limiting what people can comment on. And at this point, it is such a blank slate in our minds that we're not focusing or specifying any type of management action at this phase. So we felt that the two public meetings that we're hosting represented the two states, New Jersey, New York, but that there will be many other opportunities for folks to comment both publicly and in writing as we develop our EIS, as I said, 12 to 16 months down the road. So I hope that answers the question, but we do want to emphasize that the opportunity to comment publicly on this proposal does not stop on August 8th. We will again, in a year's time or so, have a draft environmental impact statement, draft management plan, and proposed rulemaking out for public comment, which will have a much greater degree of specificity than where we are now.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brookhart. So I'm going to bring it back to the council. We have the opportunity to comment, but it does not have to be before the August 8th deadline. So if it's the will of the council to comment before August 8th, that's one thing, but I really think that we can construct a much more meaningful set of comments if we take our time doing it. That's my opinion. Mr. Pappalardo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You captured my thoughts exactly. I do think we do need to comment on this, but we've got the time. We heard earlier we've got time. We've got, I think, till the end of December. So I really like to give this a good amount of time to think and put together some very comprehensive comments. So that's my recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other Any other comments? Actually, I want to go to Mr. Nice. Would you be good with that, Tom?
Yeah, I actually think that's good. Depending when we get the letter, the 30485, whatever, that letter, we may want to negotiate a little bit on the December 31st deadline, just to let Matt know that. As all of us know, September and December council meetings tend to be very busy with specifications actions, and it might help us if we have a little bit more time than the end of December, but I can try and work that out with him, and then we can write a reply.
Okay, any other comments from the council? Mr. Brookhart, did you hear us hint at maybe extending the time period past the end of December?
I did, Chairman Reed, yes.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Is there any other comments on this issue? Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Brookhart, for giving us a presentation, spending some time with us. I really appreciate it, and you can look forward to our comments.
So, thank you all very much.
Okay, so that concludes our other business. I don't believe there is any other business, but before we go to our last motion, I just wanted to thank all of you, you know, for hanging out and for your participation in a very productive meeting. As always, thank you to Jonio and the Ears and all the staff for their support. And please get home safe and enjoy a nice 4th of July. So, Joni, we have a motion, the final motion. Okay. Jesus. You only had 3 days to get it up there, but there's no problem. That's fine. Okay. So Dr. Sissonwine moved and Mr. Godfrey seconded to adjourn the June council meeting. Dr. Sissonwine, you have any rationale?
I guess I could review my 45 years of interacting with the No, the rationale is it's probably time for me to retire. But I do want to say I'll miss everybody involved in this the council family. I mean, council members, I mean, agency people, PDT members, SSC members, the whole gang, in particular, some of the staff people like Joan and Juanita, who are over there holding the fort, I guess that's the proper terminology. So I'll miss you all. It's been a very special engagement for a long period of time, very special people. Some unique characters that I'll never forget as well. So with that, if there is no objection to the motion, I'll declare the meeting closed.
Thank you, everyone. Get home safe. See you in September.